Ghana's economy and other world economies are going through recession, financial instability, and macroeconomic stagnation. The situation is causing hardships in countries, culminating in demonstrations. Radio Ghana finds out from some financial and economic analysts what they believe should be done to address these challenges. First, the executive director of ISODEC, Dr. Steve Mantiel, who said there is macroeconomic instability because the managers of the economy have lost control of the financial market. He said the worst situation now is the falling value of the cedi to the dollar.
There are a number of factors, but I think they all come together to constitute what we call the macroeconomic instability, where we lose control over inflation. And a lot of times, this comes also with instability in the fixing of the exchange rate, the rate at which manufacturing companies will borrow, as well as a weakening currency. So generally, I think there is chaos on the macroeconomic front. But the most felt instability is in the area of our foreign exchange, or the falling value of the cedi, which invariably affects the purchasing power of the cedi and leads to inflation. If you're talking about the rising cost of goods, I would like to separate them into two broad categories. We are looking at the goods, finished goods that are imported and finished goods that are produced domestically. And these are all affected in any way by the macroeconomic instability and the decline in the value of the cedi. In the case of imported goods, when your cedi declines, then what it means is that you need more cedis to be able to purchase on the world market. So when you bring these goods in country, then of course the rate at which you need to sell them to be able to recover your foreign exchange equivalent of cost of purchase will be higher. And so you need to sell them at a higher price. And as the cedi continues to decline, you also continue to be varying your prices so that at least you are able to fetch the same amount of foreign exchange equivalent with a premium in order to continue being in business. There is also the factor of increases in import duties as a result of the cedi's decline. Because let me just say that most of our import duties are calculated on the basis of the foreign exchange cost of purchase of the goods. And so when you have the cedi declining, then the foreign exchange cost, the percentage of the foreign exchange cost, which is calculated in dollars or any foreign exchange, will lead to having to provide more cedis to make up for the duties that is paid. And then thirdly, there is the introduction of new taxes, the 2.5% additional VAT, which has also compounded in increased cost, because invariably these are passed on to the final consumer of the product. And there is also increases in haulage costs as a result of fuel price increases. And again, this is also linked to the weakening dollar, because the foreign exchange component of the petroleum price builder has declined over the years as the cedi dip. And so we are now needing more cedis to be able to procure the same amount of fuel costs, and which translates into higher fuel prices at the pumps. So all these have added up to push prices up on daily or even on a weekly basis.
Dr. Mantiel, when you look at even the rapid change of the price of cement on the local market, yes. Cement is being produced here by two major companies. Why the sudden change of price? And so what should be the solution simply for government to arrest the instability on the financial market?
It's the best way to deal with it, because these are issues arising out of increasing cost of production. You know, businesses are set up to make profit. And so definitely whenever the cost of production goes up, these are passed on to the consumer in the form of increases in prices. And let's look at what is happening in terms of cost of production. The major variables have been electricity and water, the utilities, as we call them. They have had to go up as a result of increases in petroleum prices. And this is affecting the cost of production of major companies like the cement manufacturing companies. There's also the additional VAT that has been introduced, which also affects them because they have to pass on this to the ultimate consumer. And again, the rising cost of borrowing, I mean, interest rates have gone up and businesses are actually will pass on the cost of borrowing in the form of increases in prices and all that. So insofar as interest rates continue to go up, insofar as fuel, electricity, water, and all the other variables, inputs into production go up, there's no way we can host the prices of finished products such as cement. And so the way to deal with the problem, in my view, will be for government to look at, and that is the more reason some of us are tended to push strongly for the maintenance of fuel subsidy, and also subsidy on water and other utilities. This is because if you remove subsidy, you are invariably going to increase the cost of production, and which will translate into higher prices at the market. And so the argument that we make that in the absence of a better way of targeting the poor, let's maintain blanket subsidy because it invariably also means subsidizing cost of production and keeping prices at affordable levels.
Dr. Simeon Tiao is the executive director of ISODEC.
An economic analyst, Isaac Adongu, says the current hardship as a result of economic challenges are due to several years of accumulated mismanagement, fiscal deficits, and the implementation of subsidy on petrol, diesel, and other agricultural products. Speaking to Radio Ghana on how to address the current challenges, Mr. Adongu called for the removal of subsidy on these products to ensure financial stability. He said that is the only way governments can address the financial squeeze. He spoke to George Ankara.
The general condition of the economy has been said several times is that the economy is facing several challenges. Now, some of these challenges are challenges that have occurred because of the inability of the country to respond to those challenges a lot earlier, several years ago, and which have accumulated to then give us the effect that we are seeing today. Don't forget that in 2013, we spent almost 8 to 9 months of our time battling each other in court without much activity happening in the economy. And so you ended the year having a shortfall in inflows that would have supported the city. And once the city begins to depreciate because of liquidity difficulties in the system, all manner of products will begin to see increases in prices because we are import dependent. And once we are import dependent, the depreciation of the city would have an impact on the inflationary trend and therefore the general increase in price of goods and services. We are also aware that generally government revenue is generated from the productive sector of the economy. And so once the productive sector of the economy is facing challenges such as the energy crisis, making it almost impossible for industry to produce and to generate the output that is required in order to bring down inflation, you would begin to realize that generally government's own revenue targets will be missed. And once government does not meet its revenue target, it simply means that government will be running a deficit, and the deficit will begin to impact on the general increase in price of goods and services, because then it will mean that you are spending much more than you can actually generate. So these are some of the factors. Again, we are also having to address this deficit by looking at the revenue side of government and to try and rationalize expenditure. And so subsidies have to be removed in order to ensure that government is able to ensure fiscal stability and to minimize expenditure on non-targeted subsidies. And once you begin to remove subsidies, what you get is that prices will go up because the subsidies are basically a deliberate reduction in price of goods and services as government begins to bear those reductions. So once government decides not to foot that bill, you are now moving towards a full cost recovery, which will increase the price of goods and services, and beginning to have the impact that we are feeling at the moment.
You would agree with me that the introduction of the subsidy is to cushion this hardship of the ordinary man or the poor. If you are saying that government should remove the subsidy so that we have a plain ground for ensuring financial stability, are you looking at the implications on the poor?
That's what I'm saying, that the difficulty you have is you are forcing government to spend money that it doesn't have to subsidize. And so if government doesn't have the money, how does the government subsidize for goods and services when it doesn't have the money? Again, when you subsidize petroleum products and energy, what you are doing is that you are subsidizing everybody across board. And so you are not discriminating between the poor and the rich. So the poor who is using the V8 and the Land Cruisers are being subsidized to run their vehicles, while the poor who are also boarding the commercial vehicles and the trotters are also benefiting from the same subsidy. A better way to allocate resources is to be able to target the poor and channel these subsidies poor. At the moment, we have not found a better way of targeting the poor and pushing those subsidies to them. And that is why aggressively implementing government social protection agenda would address the imbalance. And what are those social protection issues that we are talking about? Killing up the issue of the livelihood empowerment against poverty would address the problems that we are looking at, making sure that you are providing free uniforms to poor children, providing meals for poor people in school, and also ensuring that the National Health Insurance Scheme exempts the poor and the aged and the disabled from paying a premium. So you now have a situation where you are moving the money from a generalized subsidy into specifically targeted poor areas that you are subsidizing. And that is the best way to allocate resources, and not to have a blanket subsidy that goes for everybody, whether you are rich or poor.
On taxes and levies, and whether or not the Ghana Revenue Authority has widened the tax net to rake in expected revenue for government, Mr. Adongu explains that much has been done in that direction. He agreed with the government's decision to suspend the implementation of the 17 persons, VAT, until enough education is done?
I think that there are two things that we are looking at here. First, the government's ability to spread the tax net and to generally improve the efficiencies with the collection of revenue is very, very paramount. And we are aware that a lot of measures are already being taken to improve that. The merging of the value-added tax secretariat with the Internal Revenue Service and also that of the Customs, Excise and Preventive Service into a Ghana Revenue Authority is meant to ensure that they share information and improve on the efficiency of targeting people who are supposed to pay and making sure that they pay the tax. So to some extent, some work is being done to improve the tax collection mechanism in tax administration. What you are talking about, which is the 17.5% tax, there are two regimes that we are looking at. One is a 2.5% tax addition to fund the Ghana Infrastructure and Investment Fund. That is not the one in this. The other one is in dispute is the introduction of 17.5% tax on financial service. And that we believe that there has been some lack of education on understanding the mechanisms and even the way the system is supposed to operate. And to that extent, government needed to suspend the introduction of the 17.5% tax on financial services in order to engage the stakeholders a lot more and in order to be able to provide a much better implementation regime that will make sure that we all understand the implications and also address any unforeseen negative consequences that the introduction of that tax would have. And so for that, I agree that the government needed to suspend. But for the 2.5% additional tax that is supposed to fund the Ghana Infrastructure and Investment Fund, that it will be implemented. And I think that that is already being implemented, which is not the one in the decree.
On the funding of the Black Stars, Mr. Adongo said the appearance fee is from sponsors and FIFA. He gave some suggestions for solution.
I think that we have to understand how government treasury works. In the first place, how does government fund wages and salaries? Wages and salaries are funded from the consolidated fund. Did the $3 million come from the consolidated fund? We need to investigate that. My belief is that this was money that came from sponsors of the Black Stars. And those sponsors of the Black Stars had agreed initially by a certain arrangement through which the Black Stars were going to be paid back here in Ghana. And once the Black Stars began to agitate, you needed to modify the arrangement that existed between government or the GFA, the ministry, and those funding agencies in order to arrange to send those funds to them. Of course, nobody is happy that we have to fly in $3 million to support our Black Stars. And the evidence has shown that the Brazilian government is now benefiting a lot from those $3 million because the Black Stars have had to pay a huge tax on those funds and are even being compelled to put those monies into bank accounts in Brazil before they can be transferred. What that means is that additional bank charges will occur on those transactions to the benefit of the government and businesses in Brazil. And that is where the unpatriotic nature of our Black Stars begins to show that Ghanaians could have benefited from these taxes. And yet, they insisted that they needed their money in Brazil. And I believe that it has nothing to do with the wage bill, because the wage bill is funded through the consolidated fund. How the Black Stars' appearance fee was paid through sponsors to be replenished, to be reimbursed by FIFA.
What are some of the remedies that you want to immediately suggest to government to arrest the situation, depreciation of the city, and the daily increase on finished goods?
I think that the major impact on the inflationary trend today is the depreciation of the city. And I believe that the measures that are required are essentially the measures that will contain the importation into the country by reducing our imports and making sure that we rely on the use of Ghanaian-produced products. That will conserve foreign exchange and that will ease the pressure on the city. The second one is to aggressively expand the export base. And that you don't achieve overnight. To expand the export base requires a lot of work whose fruits would begin to show over a number of years. And therefore, you don't immediately see a direct impact with the expansion of the export sector. However, Ghana has been using short-term measures in addressing some of these over the last 2-3 decades. And one of them is the syndicated facility that always comes in to support the cocoa board during the cocoa buying season. And this year, there is anticipation that between July and August, $1.8 billion of those funds will come in. And once that $1.8 billion comes in, obviously it will improve our international reserves and it will improve the liquidity of the dollar in the system. Don't forget, cocoa boards spent in cities in Ghana. And so when it takes $1.8 billion of foreign currency and then converts that into cities in order to buy cocoa, we'll have more liquidity in the system and the situation should begin to see an improvement.
That was an economic analyst, Isaac Adongo, on the state of the rising cost of products on the market.
And we're still talking about the economy. The 2012 presidential candidate of the PPP, Dr. Bakwesi Indum, says one of the major problems facing Ghana's economy is the lack of confidence in the economy and the financial sector. He asked government to stop all new projects and implement only ongoing ones to ensure value for money. Dr. Indum was sharing with Radio Ghana his views on how to surmount the economic challenges facing Ghana. He touched on the waste in the system as well as the need to tackle corruption head on.
I know we have a problem. I know we have difficulty, and that I, being the leader, take full responsibility for where we are, and that my job is to find the resources, to find the energy, to find everything that is needed for all of us to sacrifice together, to work together, and to benefit together. So that's first thing, is recognition and acceptance that we are indeed in a deep problem.
But, Doc, I believe government has accepted that there are challenges.
Government sometimes says that there are challenges, but then it quickly comes and says that they are not insurmountable ones. They are not big problems, that this is just a temporary thing. My friend, what we have is not a temporary problem. It's a recurring problem. We improve a little bit, then we go back down. We improve a little bit, and we go back down. That is a problem facing business. It's a problem facing individuals in this country. So what I'm saying is that we must first accept, to lead by acknowledging that this is a deep recurring problem. So number two is that, and I've been saying this all over every time, that government is the biggest purchaser, the biggest buyer, the biggest procurer of goods and services. The government of Ghana must make sure that the taxes that it collects, the revenues that it gains, that it must use it to support Ghanaian businesses, Ghanaian professionals, Ghanaian consultants, and so on and so forth. If I was also in this situation, what I would also do is to make sure that we stop new projects. We don't go and promise anything new. We make sure that existing projects that we spent monies on, we bring them to completion so we can take benefit from them. We don't start any new things. We complete what we've started. And then everybody knows that energy, whether it's fuel, electricity, those are our biggest hindrances. And the only way you deal with those things is to sit down, let the leader, the president, take charge of that matter. And we spend the monies that we have, single-minded purpose, to fix this energy problem. I've been an energy minister before, and I know that the problems are there. They are on the table. They require difficulties. They require sacrifices. They require expertise. We must solve the energy difficulty that we have. And, you know, one of the things that we also don't want to talk about is corruption, because I know, and I've done the calculation, that if we were to solve the bribery, the corruption, the waste in government, the waste in our system, my friend, we will not be talking about this problem. And that must start with punishing people who have been identified as having engaged in those acts. And that
Dr. Bakwesi Indum on the state of the economy.
The leader of the United Renaissance Party, Kofi Wayo, says Ghana began to face hardships since the overthrow of Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Commenting on a demonstration over current hardships faced by Ghanaians, Mr. Wayo said former President Kufuor must equally be blamed for signing what he says is an unfair agreement by mortgaging Ghana's oil for 35 years.
Hardship was brought to Ghana from the date of Nkrumah's overthrow, okay? So I'm not saying that John Mahama is doing great or whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you got to look at the circumstances. Kufuor sold Ghana Telecom. He gave away the oil for 35 years. He sold the 6% of Ashanti Goldfield left. He sold 3%. They sold the Ghana Telecom, dashed their people, and then the other phone company, he dashed the Americans, you know. So the question is this. What, you know, Kufuor went hippie, and I told you people, but you Ghanaians don't listen. See, the white guys say we don't have memory, and we have apprehension for the future. I told you this hippie will destroy Ghana for 50 years. So the question is, does John Mahama have the ability and capability to wiggle out of this? This is what we got to watch out for. Kufuor created all the problems. So the hardship, you know, John Mahama is just not tackling it right. But he didn't bring it. It's been here. You know, if you remember 2006, 2007, Doomsop. Kufuor took Ghana. I helped him. I said, let me fix the water and the light. They said, I'll you more down. Yeah, you're saying, and you were all abusing me. Remember MPP? I said, let me fix the water. Let me fix the light for the people. So these politicians who are leading this so-called demonstration, look at the cars they drive. They're in a Jaguar, and they're telling you, boys are bread. Oh, you understand? They just want to steal from the people. Ask them how many of them are in the villages like I am helping the people. How many of them? It's like MPP, they use me, right, to get to power. Now I know the culture. So I'm telling Ghanaians, look, I told you have Dumsa. You had it, right, in Kufuor time. Because they don't know what to do. You're having it now. I'm standing by. If John Mahama wants to fix it, I'm ready to fix it. I have the capability, ability, and the know-how, and bring the prices down. I know how to do it.
How are you going to do that? You are a leader of a political party, United Renaissance Party. If you win power today, how are you going to fix the economy, Kuti?
Okay, see, this is the way we think here. That's why we don't make progress. When you're going to war, you don't tell the enemy what weapons you have. Never do that. Ask any soldier. You are telling me, look, the World Bank controls Ghana. You know that. Kufuor sold the country to the World Bank and the IMF, right? And the other donor nations. Oil is gone for 35 years. The cocoa is gone for 25 years. So tell me, Kufuor should come out and tell the Ghanaian, what does he want John Mahama to work with? I'm not making excuse for John Mahama. I know he can do better. And I know he's going to do better. Because I know all the politicians. I've been with them. They're wicked. They don't care about the people. Only John Mahama talks to me about the poor. So because of that, before God, I have no choice but morally to stand behind him. I'm not saying he's doing great, but he got to start listening and change his tactics. If he doesn't, well, you know, in about 3-4 months, he can change the situation. If he wishes, we're standing by. But MPP don't have anybody in there who can change anything. They just want to get in there, go to London. Look at the leader of a party, MPP. He's in London giving orders. Are we in London? Are we in London? Do we belong to England? If you want to lead me, why are you not in the village giving speeches? Why are you in London? Why do Ghanaians even believe this jokers?
Kofi Wai is the leader of the United Renaissance Party.
And the CPP's General Secretary, Ivor Greenstreet, says the financial and economic challenges facing the country is a collective one and must be addressed as such. In his contribution on finding a solution to the challenges, Mr. Greenstreet said there must be conscious effort towards producing and manufacturing finished goods instead of importing everything.
You notice that even recently an attempt was made by the government to bring all parties together and all shades of opinion when we met at Akosombo, or rather Senchi, to have a discussion about the economic problems and the difficulties facing the country. And you will notice that the largest opposition party, MPP, absented themselves from that program. So clearly, anybody in power or any government in power faces a challenge with our current democratic system of trying to get unity of purpose on some key issues that everybody must agree on. Agreement on fiscal approach, monetary approach, and exchange rate approach to the kinds of problems that we have been facing that have affected our city. So that is number one, some leadership that will demonstrate a capacity to achieve unity of purpose and bring all stakeholders together and ensure that you create hope and belief that what you are doing inures to everybody's benefit and not necessarily to the benefit of you as an incumbent government. Secondly, you also need to galvanize the population and the various sector groups to understand exactly what your vision and program is. You will notice that for the last year or two, since the election in 2012, there have been numerous challenges and problems with respect to teachers, doctors, pharmacists. In fact, all groups have been up in arms.
Ivor Greenstreet is the General Secretary of the CPP.